Chapter 9 again, please. Reading from verse 23. And after many days were fulfilled, the Jews took counsel to kill him. This is Saul of Tarsus. But their lying in wait was known to Saul, and they watched the gates day and night to kill him. Then the disciples took him in by night and let him down by the wall in a basket. And when Saul was come to Jerusalem, he essayed to join himself to the disciples, but they were all afraid of him and believed not that he was a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto them how he had seen the Lord in the way, and that he had spoken to him, and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Jesus. And he was with them coming in and going out at Jerusalem. I was encouraged to possibly continue on with what we started this afternoon, so that's what I'm going to seek to do for a few minutes. We were able to see Saul of Tarsus and how God saved him, and the transformation that took place in his life, and how God was going to use him in a special way. But we've seen, too, that his friends became his enemies, and his enemies became his friends. It's interesting that they're now plotting to kill him because they wanted to stop him from doing the very thing he was trying to stop before he got saved. Made me think of an incident that took place in our work when we were in the Linwood area having meetings. And I was having a series of meetings with Norman Mellish. I think many of you know him. And he wanted to come out with me in the neighborhood. And I told him, I said, I really think it'd be best if you just stay and then you get a chance and meet the people and then you come out with me the next night. Well, Norman Mellish, he thought otherwise, and he asked one of the sisters who was coming, he said, can I use your car? I'm going to see if I can find Tom, because already he's out picking up the people. And the car that he was using was the same kind of car that the narcotic agents use. It was a Chevy Impala, blue, and that's the kind they would always use when they drive around in the areas. And here he's running up and down the streets trying to find me. And he saw my truck, and he comes wheeling around real fast, right in behind my truck. Well, I was standing there talking to this couple of the gang kids, and one of the boys jumped off the fence, and he says, Tom, there's a narc behind you. He wants us to kill him. And I looked around to see who it was, and it was Norman. So I said, no, I said, he's my preaching partner, and we're going to let him slide for at least a week anyway. So he called his wife up that night, and he said, honey, I'll be home in a week if they don't kill me first. But anyway, I say all that just to say, two times over, they were trying to kill the Saul of Tarsus. But it's interesting, he makes his trip to Jerusalem, and as he gets to Jerusalem, he arrives before the news came that he has been transformed, his life has changed. The dramatic preaching of the gospel, and that's what we're going to have in a few minutes. The gospel is going to be preached, and it is the power of God unto salvation. It's a power that can transform, change lives. Not only change your destiny of difference between from going to the place called hell to go to heaven, but also to change your life, your lifestyle, and how you're going to be able to live for God and make your life count for the God who loves you and who has given his son to die for you. And so Saul of Tarsus had this change. And he comes to Jerusalem, and it says here he essayed to join with himself to the disciples. And the word essayed, the actual tense of it is that he continued trying to go to the assembly. He continually asked if he could be received into the assembly there in Jerusalem. And it's obvious, it seems, is that the elders in the assembly would tell him, well, no. You can imagine the first day he walks in the assembly meeting there. And here comes the one who is terrorizing all the Christians. And he's coming in there to sit down and to worship the Lord. I can imagine that the elders were probably thinking to themselves, well, is this a new tactic? I mean, this man terrorizing people, break into to meetings like this and take away captives and everything. And now he's coming in a different way. I don't know. So anyway, he essayed to come. He essayed to join himself with the disciples there. I can imagine that first Lord's Day in my mind. The elders probably came to him and said to him, "Now, nice to have you. Thanks for coming." And then asked him to sit where all of us sat before we were received into the assembly fellowship. And he was sitting there as an observer, watching, observing on a godly assembly and how it functions. When he left to go wherever it was he was staying, humanly speaking, I can imagine him saying, "You know, I know more about the Bible than all those men over there." Before he went to Jerusalem, if I have the chronological dating right, in Galatians chapter 1, he was in the desert. And when he was in that desert, he was in God's school. And he writes there in Galatians chapter 1 that God was revealing his son, not to him, but revealing his son in him. And while he was revealing his son in him, he would be teaching him the truths that you have in the epistles that he wrote. The truths of what was the salvation was going to do, that he was going to bring Jew and Gentile together in the book of Ephesians. He was teaching them how that salvation wasn't by keeping the law or things like that in the book of Galatians. And the things that he wrote later in his epistles, he was being taught. God was revealing these things to him. He was revealing to him his son and all that his son means, the glories of his son. And now he's just came away from an assembly meeting. He was told to sit in the place in the back to observe, if I have it right. Could the Saul of Tarsus say to himself, "You know, I don't have to put up with this. I could go to the synagogue. They would take me in over there. Or I could go over here and they could take me in over there. Or I could go over there and they would take me in over there." Humanly speaking, he may have been able to say that. But spiritually speaking, he couldn't say that. You know why? Because God had revealed his son in him. And Saul of Tarsus would not be happy, let's say it in our language, in a denominational church. A denominational church that has put another name above the name of Christ. A denominational church that has a federal head. Saul of Tarsus couldn't be happy in a situation like that. He couldn't be happy in the synagogues. There's only one place he could go. And that was back to the assembly. And you know, brothers and sisters, young people, all of us, once the truths of God's assembly is revealed to our hearts, once we have got a grip of it from those scriptures, there was a man that used to stay at my grandmother and grandfather's house, and his name was Andrew Douglas when he came to visit in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, for many of you, that name will just go right over the top of your heads, but for the older brethren and sisters, you'll remember probably Andrew Douglas. Andrew Douglas, my mom used to tell me this when I was a boy. She would say to me, Andrew Douglas used to say, "Once you're in the assembly and you understand what the assembly is, you've committed spiritual suicide because you won't be happy anywhere else." And I think that's true. There's a lot of truth in that. Because once you understand the truth of what the Bible teaches about the assembly and how it functions and why we do what we do. We were speaking about head coverings. Head covering is just not another ornament that you put on top of your head. It's just not part of your clothing. Head covering has the purpose of owning the headship of Christ in the assembly and recognizing who he is. That's just one little thing. The breaking of bread every first day of the week. All the things that we do. And once you understand that from the scriptures, you can't be happy anywhere else, even though things don't go as well as you like them to go. You feel like you, just like the Saul of Tarsus, I have to go back. I have to go back. Well, he did come back. And it says that he said to join himself to the disciples. Now, that word join has the idea of a marriage. Adam and Eve were joined together as one flesh in their marriage. And when a person comes into the assembly, let me just give it as an illustration, a live illustration. We had a young man coming to our meetings. He was baptized. He went a couple of years actually. And he made no effort to come into the assembly. He didn't ask to come into the assembly. A couple of times he was approached about it, but nothing. And a young couple that had just recently been brought into the assembly came to him and said, how come? You were baptized 2 or 3 years ago. Why are you not in the assembly? This is what he said. He said, when I get married, he wasn't married at the time. When I get married, I'm going to join myself to my bride, my wife, and never leave her side. And he says, when I come to the assembly, that will be the same thing. I am going to commit myself to the assembly and never, ever leave it. Later on, he was received in the assembly. And he was married later even after that. And he hasn't left his bride and he hasn't left the assembly. Why? Because it was a conviction. And here, the Saul of Tarsus, he came and he joined himself to the disciples. He was part of an assembly that was there in Jerusalem. But on the flip side of it, it says, but they, the disciples, the elders of the assembly, were all afraid of him. And it's the same verb tense as you have there when it says he essayed. He was continually coming. And they were continually afraid of him, allowing him to come into the assembly fellowship. Is this the right thing to do? I believe there's a principle here that elders have a definite responsibility before the Lord and before the assembly to be careful who they receive into the assembly fellowship. Ideally, every true born-again Christian should be in the assemblies because scripturally, all the other things that are out there are not really of God. We follow a pattern, a scriptural pattern. And the elders need to ask the questions when they're interviewing somebody for assembly fellowship. What does the assembly mean to you? Why do you want to be part of the assembly? What have you received from God that makes you understand that this is where I should be? And it's interesting to listen to the responses. Because as elders, they'll have to give an account to God. Maybe I should say this. Our son was saved at 10 years of age. At 11 years, he said to me, Dad, I want to be baptized. We were starting a new work. Everybody that was coming to the meetings, either very newly saved or not saved, and I said to him, son, I appreciate your exercise, and I have no doubt in my mind that you are ready for baptism. I have no doubt in my mind. But I said to him, we'll be setting a precedence here. You're my son. I'm your dad. And I'm not saying I did right or I did wrong. I don't know. But I told him, I said, I appreciate it, son, if you'll wait a little longer. He looked me straight in my eyes, as only my son can do. And he said, Dad, you're responsible. I was. I don't know today. He's going on well. In fact, he's been recently commended to the Lord's work. But the point is this. I had to make a choice. And elders have to make a choice of who they baptize, who they received into the assembly fellowship. And in this case, these believers, these elders were concerned about this man called Saul of Tarsus coming into the assembly. Will he be an asset? Will he be destructive to the assembly? And those things, I think, need to be taken into consideration when it comes to the assembly fellowship. So I just say this, brethren and sisters, younger ones, maybe you're not in the assembly and you are wanting to be in the assembly. And the elders, if you've talked to the elders and they haven't said yes or no, maybe they're just waiting, they're watching. I tell you, at home, we have several young boys and a couple of young girls, and we're watching. We want to see if there's really an exercise on their part, or is it just because mom and dad are in the assembly, or is it just because their friends are in the assembly? Why do they really want to come in the assembly? What do they do during the breaking of bread meeting in their back seat there? Are they playing games? Are they chewing bubble gum? Are they talking to their friends? What are they doing? I remember before I was received into the assembly fellowship, I was saved at 17 years of age, and in our assembly, it was a large assembly, not as large as this, but it was a large assembly, and the parents would leave their children in the back seat with people like myself. We were older, we were in our teens, and we had to watch the kids. But I remember sitting there as a young 17-year-old boy with tears in my eyes as I listened to my brethren praying or worshiping the Lord. I could worship the Lord just as well in that back seat as I did when I came into the circle. Didn't make any difference as far as my worship was concerned. But I would ask you, if you are interested in the assembly fellowship and the elders are watching, what are they seeing? Where's your interest? What does the assembly really mean to you? What does the Lord Jesus Christ mean to you? And so at times, it's best sometimes the elders might feel like we want to just hold back a little bit. Because we want it to be your conviction. We want it to come from your heart. So that if when you are received in the assembly fellowship, you're committing spiritual suicide, you wouldn't be happy anywhere else. But then the other side of that. I know of situations where people have asked to come into the assembly fellowship. And it is a real sincere desire. And they love the assembly and they want to be there. And they have talked to the elders. And it seems like the elders are forgotten. Nothing else is said. I think we have to be, as elders, be very careful about these issues. And that we don't discourage our young people. Don't push them along so fast that they come in the assembly before they know what they're doing. But don't hold back so much that they become so discouraged. Because the assembly is, I feel, just like salvation is something that is revealed to the lost sinner. Comes time for baptism, that's something I believe the Spirit of God will reveal to that person. I need to be baptized because that's what God says. And when it comes to reception into the assembly, it's something that God will reveal to their heart. As they're studying the Word of God, as they see it being done before them, there's a conviction that comes within their hearts. And so, but to finish up, they were afraid of him, and then Barnabas came along as his letter of commendation, you might say, and he was received into the assembly there in Jerusalem. And in verse 28, he was with them. I love those words. He was with them. You see, when you come into the assembly, you're not there to change things. You're not there to set a different tone to things. You're coming into the assembly to be with the assembly, to be a help, to be a support to the assembly, to pray for the assembly, and to be a contributor to the assembly. He was with them coming in and going out at Jerusalem. Here was a man that loved to be in the assembly meetings. He was, no matter what the activity was, whether going out to say with the gospel, he was a part of it. Coming in through the regular assembly meetings, he was a part of it. And I think that we see a little example from the life of the Apostle Paul as he was radically changed and he came and he wanted to take his place into a scriptural assembly, and how God, of course, used him in a very, very powerful way.